Thanks for joining us for the USA Rugby Happy Hour Live here on Twitter Spaces. We are here for the next hour to talk all things rugby. That's USA Rugby, Major League Rugby, and much more. Please share the show with your friends, teammates, family, or just anyone who likes to talk rugby or has any interest in rugby. You can invite them right now via DM or send them a link to join in by clicking the up arrow at the top of the screen. Do that right away. Let's get them in as soon as possible. If you'd like to come up here to comment or ask a question of the guests or our hosts, us, myself, and John, we highly encourage you to do so. We love to have the listeners drive the show. To do that, click where it says request at the bottom by the microphone, and we'll get you up here as soon as possible. Quick note, this show is being recorded and will be on the podcast in the next couple of days. And lastly, to get updates on future shows and news about USA Rugby, Major League Rugby, and much more, follow Eagles Overseas and Rugby Morning here on Twitter and most other social media channels. I am Bill Baker of Eagles Overseas, also the host of the Eagle-Eyed Rugby Podcast, and here to introduce himself is my co-host, John Fitzpatrick.
Hey, thanks, Bill, and good evening, everyone, and thanks, George, for joining us. As Bill mentioned, my name is John from Rugby Morning, and our tagline is Rugby Fan Made Easy. So what we do is we curate all the top rugby news from the U.S. and overseas, and we serve it up in a bite-sized email so you can stay informed in 5 minutes or less. Super easy. You can find us on social at Rugby Morning. So, Bill, I'm going to kick it back to you.
Thanks, John. Also, great to be back together again. We've been on a bit of a hiatus. We were on Clubhouse for a long time, and I wouldn't say a long time, a number of times, and it really enjoyed it. Had some great guests, and now we're over here on Twitter, and hopefully we don't mess it all up. It should be a good show. And speaking of tonight's show, our guest tonight is, well, he's the man who's probably been asked a million times. So don't ask him tonight if Mark Cuban will buy ML franchise. It's our great honor to have Major League Rugby Commissioner George Kilbert on. George, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing good. Good to talk to you, Bill and John. All's good.
So what's going on this weekend, George? What are you up to?
Oh, you know, just hanging out by the pool. Not too much going on this weekend. No, seriously. Obviously, our season begins. You know, we have six matches this weekend. We're really fired up to start year five of Major League Rugby.
And where are we going to find you this week?
So I will be traveling south down to Austin, Austin, Texas, to see the Austin Gilgronies and the first ever match of our expansion team, the Dallas Jackals.
You know, I think that's the great place to kick off. John, I think you had some questions about the Dallas Jackals. I don't know if you want to jump in now. But George, I think, what are you looking forward to the most with Dallas? I mean, I know they had a rough start getting into the league and out. You know, what are we looking at right now with Dallas?
Well, they've had a lot of challenges, as we know. It's not easy to launch an expansion team in professional sports under COVID and all the problems that go with that. But, you know, ironically, for those that have been following Major League Rugby, you know, Dallas was an original seven franchise. Mm-hmm. That group was part of the group that helped form this league. They just haven't had the right situation to play in. And they had a kind of an ownership change. And one of the managing partners, also the president of business operations of the Texas Rangers in Major League Baseball. So if you follow that at all, the Rangers built a brand new ballpark and then they kept their old one and they reformatted their old stadium to more of a football, rugby, soccer kind of configuration. Mm-hmm. And that's where the Jackals will be playing. So a lot of eyes on the Jackals, and we'll see how they do.
I'm excited to see how they do. Definitely. One thing I noticed with that new stadium, that's where you shot the Rise of Rugby at.
We did. We used a great agency here in Dallas, Texas, by the name of Pyro. They've won numerous awards. They've produced Super Bowl commercials for Dodge, but they have a rugby DNA within their agency. And so as we went out and looked for a partner to do this, they jumped to the forefront, and we used Choctaw Stadium here in Dallas and that agency to shoot the Rise of Rugby.
I just interviewed Will Hooley a couple of days ago for the Eagle Eye Rugby Podcast, and we'd about that shoot. And, you know, I labeled him the face of Major League Rugby now because he's at the end of the try. And he says, I don't know about that, but.
Well, those guys did a great job. We brought in a player from each team. And, you know, I think they were here for 3 days. And, you know, we did a media day. So we got a lot of just B-roll footage and photographs and stuff. And then we shot Rise of Rugby on day two. And the coolest thing that came out of it is all those guys, they didn't really know one another, you know, and because of COVID. You know, the whole social part of our post-match kind of meetups for a bite to eat or a beer, you know, kind of all went by the wayside. So a lot of these players don't know one another. Yeah. And just watching these 13 guys over the 2 days really get to bond. And that was really a cool offshoot of it that we weren't really necessarily expecting. But Will was terrific. He's a great guy. You know, San Diego did a big announcement yesterday about their new stadium situation. And Will, along with Chris Robshaw and a few others, were front and center.
Now, I'm really excited about that new stadium they're building. I think it's, what, next year it'll be open, 2023?
Yeah, so they're moving to San Diego State to a brand new facility that's being built, and they did a 10-year kind of arrangement with them, and it'll be, you know, one of the top facilities, if not the top facility in our league, you know, when the Legion move into that.
You know, speaking of stadiums, you know, we've seen a few. You know, the Free Jacks have Veterans Memorial Stadium they're moving into, which is not a new stadium, but it's a really fun place. You know, which other places stand out? Is that the kind of size stadium we're looking at for Major League Rugby at this point? I mean, obviously, LA Stadium is way big, but it's a beautiful place. But are we looking at those places that maybe fit 5,000 to 10,000 fans right now?
Yeah, I would say the sweet spot for us is anywhere between 5,000 and 15,000, with the ability to flex up when you can, when the demand is. So, you know, you talk about New England's move to Quincy. I went to the final home match for New England last year, which was in that stadium, and mm-hmm. and the Free Jacks had, you know, their largest attendance in their history that day. And it's just a wonderful facility. It's, you know, it's got a, they just, you know, the city, you know, put in a couple million dollars to fix it up and have a brand new video board and proper locker rooms. And that's going to be a great place for New England. So what you're seeing is our teams, as we get into year five, several of them are upgrading kind of their stadium situations. And that's just a sign of the growth of the sport. And, you know, being in the right facility is really key, because, you know, we need to start drawing more fans. In order to draw more fans, they want to come to first-class facilities. And so that's right at the top of the list for a lot of our teams.
And speaking of, you know, Veterans Memorial in Quincy, they do have a pretty large video board, and that's rare around the league. Is that something that we're looking to require teams to have eventually, to have some kind of video board so we could have a video referee?
You know, we're not requiring a video board. We have put in requirements about the size of stadiums for anyone that joins the league. And then for some of our current teams that aren't quite to that kind of 7,500 number, that's kind of the sweet spot minimum for us. So, you know, we are putting things like that as we talk to expansion teams. But most of our teams now have access to video board, whether it be permanent or, you know, there's now great technology where you can bring in mobile video boards as well. So it's a big part of the game. You know, it's a tool that uses to teach the game a little bit to fans that aren't familiar with rugby. But then it's also there for replays and things like that.
Hey, real quick, everybody. Our guest today is Major League Rugby Commissioner George Killebrew. If you're new to Twitter Spaces, please, this show really is all about you guys, the listeners. John and I have a list of questions that I think would be great. But if you want to come up and ask questions as well, we'd love to hear from you. And I bring that up right now because we do have Phil Harris, the host of Jack's Rangers podcast, up here. Hey, Phil, what's going on?
Hey, Bill, how you doing, man? I'm just sitting here, you know, on a Thursday night playing a little bit of rugby on my Xbox right now. I created the Free Jacks, so I got literally all of the players on the team here. You know, when you guys start talking about Fort Quincy and the Free Jacks, I feel like I'm being summoned to come speak. So, but I just wanted to jump in here for a second. King George, it was great to meet you at Fort Quincy last year at the game against Atlanta. But wanted to ask you about, you know, because I'm sitting here playing a video game that's probably about 7 years old. I had to create the Free Jacks in the game. Has there been any discussion about, you know, future licensing to these video game companies that want to bring in MLR for their rugby games?
Yeah, Phil, for sure. That's on our list. You know, it's high on our list to try to get somebody's attention to partner with us on that. So for sure. And especially as you talk about kind of the younger demographic that is really into things like NBA 2K and Madden and et cetera, you know, we want to be a part of that conversation as well. So it's very high on the priority list for a lot of reasons. I know the game you're playing now, and it's a little bit dated, if you will, but for sure, we just, you know, what NBA 2K did for the NBA, especially for younger fans, just the ability to know all the players on all the teams, not just, you know, back before that, like when I was growing up, you knew the players on your favorite team, you knew a couple players on visiting teams, but now, you know, through that technology, you're able to know every player that plays in the league, and it's just been a great tool to expand their viewership and their audience, especially in that younger demographic. So we know the importance of it. We just got to get some scale and get somebody interested to partner with us.
Thank you for answering that. And yeah, it's also a great educational tool for folks that may not be familiar with the rules, you know, pop in the game and you can really learn that way by playing. So thank you for that.
Yeah. The other thing that you guys are going to find out in Quincy, we weren't able to necessarily do it on that final home game, but that video board becomes a big teaching tool. Like if you look at our team in Austin, for example, they have a video board at their stadium at the Circuit of the Americas. And, you know, they go up with almost like a Webster's Dictionary definition of things like scrum and ruck, you know, and line out. Now, and they sometimes don't do it with audio every time, so it doesn't become obtrusive. But like when there is, you know, a line out, they'll just go up with the words, you know, as a definition, because we all know, like if you're a dad and you want to bring your kids to a rugby match, but you don't know necessarily all the rules, you don't want your son or daughter asking you questions that you can't answer. So, you know, even for the novices, after seeing the kind of Webster's Dictionary definition of a scrum or a ruck or whatever, you know, now you're able to explain it to others around you. So that video board in Quincy, you guys will be using that, I imagine, after talking to Mags a little bit, you know, that'll be part of how you use that video board as well.
For sure. Yeah. Anything that can, you know, make people more aware of the laws of the game and that sort of thing is all great. You know, I'm sure us old heads like Bill, myself and John, who've been following the game for 20 plus years or whatever it is, you know, that's not necessarily for us. It's not a resource for us, but it's for the people that are going to make this league and continue to bring it forward, because it's not just going to survive with people like me and all of the other people on the line here that have been following rugby forever. It's really about the new people that we can bring in to make sure that the league survives. That's all I got for you guys.
Thanks, Phil.
I'm going to toss it over to John now.
Thanks, Phil. I appreciate you saying those kind words. I know I took some heat from you for my power rankings that I put out earlier today. But, George, I got a follow-up question to Phil's question there about, you know, educating fans, but also continuing to drive that that emotional, that fandom connection, right, to the teams and players. You know, what you've done – you know, and the Mavericks and what the NBA has done really well, right, is selling the personal stories of the players, right, and driving home through, you know, fantasy basketball and things like that. But when you think about how fans connect with their players, a lot of that is right through the merchandise that they buy, you know, player jerseys, bobbleheads, posters, trading cards, all that stuff. What kind of conversations are you guys having at the league office and with the owners about, you know, trying to get some of those products out there? Is it talking with the right partners? Is it like the Gogronis trying to put the players' names on the back of the jersey to make it easier for the fans to have that connection with the player? Love to hear what kind of conversations you guys are having.
Yeah, so, you know, you hit it on the head. It starts with the ability to connect with the player. And in order to connect with the player, you need to know his name. Just start there, right? And we you know, when I first got here, we didn't have really any teams wearing, you know, the names on the back of the jerseys. And, you know, I think we'll have four or five this year. And then some on the shorts as well, believe it or not, you know, just because, and even though it's a team game, that has really nothing to do with it. You have to be able to identify, especially the younger demographic again, with players, you know, and geez, you think about, you know, in this country, at least, you know, the hero worship of a Kobe Bryant or a Tom Brady or, you know, fill in the blank, whoever your favorite player is in whatever sport, you can tell me his name, you can tell me his number, you know what he looks like. You may have his bobblehead, you may have what have you. And we have to definitely do that. And Austin, it was very eye-opening to me because as I went around to teams that did not want to put, you know, the names on the back of the jerseys, the fans were very docile in these stadiums. And then I remember going to Austin, you know, kind of in the mid part of the season, and they had a young rookie by the name of Connor Mooneyham. And, you know, of course, Mooneyham was across the back of his jersey and his shoulders. And there were eight kids literally on the fence, like yelling his name, you know, and you know, you have to have those kind of connections. You got to know back to, you know, if you're a dad or a mom that's taking your kids to the first match and they're asking you who's number nine and you can't answer the question, it's just not fan friendly, you know? So, you know, we can do, and really what your question was more about was merchandise and kind of how you expand the brands that way. And that's kind of a supply and demand thing. So right now, like 80% of the merchandise we sell as a league or as teams is jerseys, right? So, you know, we got a bunch of people, you know, a lot of people walking around in our jerseys, but, you know, they're just of the club and not necessarily of a player. And so I really think that's kind of the next generation for us, especially as we develop young American talent, you know, which is really part of our mission. You know, when you look at a kid like Connor Mooneyham, like, I don't think anyone would have known who he was necessarily if they were a casual fan, but then it caught on and he kind of caught Gary Gold's eye too. And there's part of that marketing that is good for the player as well. I mean, and that's why you look at some of the athletes in the NBA or the NFL or Major League Baseball or what have you that have become, you know, really good on social media on just kind of promoting themselves, not in an obtrusive way, but that uniform and that likeness and that number is all part of it.
George, to follow up on what John was saying, you know, obviously you're just saying there, you know, we have big name players in Major League Baseball, NBA, and think of, when you hear Dirk, you think of the Mavs, when you hear of Dickie, you think of the Bears, you know, and in rugby, we have the Butcher in New York, we have Pot Roast in New England. I mean, are these the players, are these like the characters that we need to market to help the league, as in the faces on the billboards? You know, it seems like in a very a North American thing, as you look at maybe the Premiership in England, it doesn't seem like they market their characters as much, or maybe I'm missing that.
No, I would agree. And that's why it's a little counterculture with these guys when we pluck one or two of them out and start to highlight. No, it's just not what they're used to in this sport, but you know, you're right. And the nicknames are great. And you look at Dylan Fawcett in New York, you know, and he's a great example of a guy that came across and has stayed and, you know, going into, I believe, probably his third or fourth year now, and very marketable guy. And that's the thing that I've been really, you know, pleasantly surprised about. Like when we had those 13 players in, we did a little dinner, you know, a couple of weeks ago before we shot, you know, the Rise of Rugby. And, you know, these guys are as marketable as any athlete I've ever been around, bar none. I mean, they can handle it. They are well-spoken. They are obviously very physically fit. You know, they're good-looking guys. They're just as marketable as there is. And now we just need to do a better job of storytelling, right, and getting them out and kind of in the mainstream, which is a little bit counterculture to how rugby does it. But it's very much the way North America does it. You know, you kind of ride those stars, and it's kind of, it's understood. It doesn't cause problems in the locker rooms for the most part when it's done properly. That there's jealousy and things like that. I mean, obviously you want to show the whole team whenever possible, but when you do have, you know, people that are more marketable, you talked about Will Hooley, who I didn't know very well until he came to Dallas. We spent a little time together. He's as marketable as an athlete as there is in this country. And I fully believe that, you know, I mean, just, he has it all. So it's like, we have got to do a better job as a league and as our teams of telling the stories of some of these individuals that are leading these teams.
Yeah, George, that's a great point. And I'm going to draw a parallel here to the NFL and fantasy football, right? That's been such a great avenue to engage casual and serious fans, right? And, you know, I've been in leagues since I was in high school, and it's a way for me to connect with some high school friends. And it's funny, I'm sitting here and I'm, for the first time ever, I'm in a fantasy Major League Rugby draft. This is a group of guys who love Major League Rugby so much that we're actually hand scoring all of this because there isn't anything out there yet. But if you think about, you know, fantasy rugby, and if you think about gaming and sports betting, you know, obviously those are certainly part of the business. Are those things too that you know, the league and team owners are looking at, or is that, you know, kind of more on the fringe and you're focusing on the core business?
No, that's, I would say those three categories that you just talked about, fantasy, gaming, and gambling, are at the top of the list.
Okay.
There are certain steps that you have to go through in order to kind of be recognized by the FanDuels of the world or whomever on the fantasy and the gambling side. And we are taking those steps. We are licensed now in four states where Major League Rugby can be bet on. But we're doing this kind of behind the scenes for this year, in preparation for the following year, where we hope to roll out a full program, because you hit it on the head. I mean, look what fantasy football did for the NFL. You know, I mean, for those that play fantasy football, which I still, and I've been with the same group for, I don't know, 20 years doing it. You know, it's funny where you stop cheering for your team and you're starting to cheer for your players, you know, that are on your team to try to win fantasy. And now, you know, back to my earlier point, you're so familiar with every NFL player or most NFL stars because of fantasy football. And it's just a really great teaching tool, and it is high, 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 if not the highest on the list of the things we're looking at for Major League Rugby.
So quick reboot, everybody. This is the USA Rugby Happy Hour live on Twitter Spaces. Thank you all for jumping in here. Again, share this space with your friends, family, enemies. I don't care. Let's get some people in this room. Let's talk rugby. And come on up. You request to speak from the bottom left and get up here. Let's ask some questions. Let's talk to George Gillibrew. If you were up here before, you can get back up. We just drop you down just to kind of clean up the room a little bit. But please come on up. Let's talk anything. I'm sure even George probably even has a great brownie recipe he can share with you if you want to ask him about that. Maybe not. But but anyway, yeah, thanks for joining us again. Coming up here, let's talk more rugby. We still got a little while left to go. We're here until 10 o'clock Eastern time. So, George, let's talk about 2021 real quick. It was a successful year, obviously, as far as COVID goes. You know, more than 2 million households tuned into the championship match, start of Rugby Network, you know, many subscribers to Rugby Network. You know, every team seems to have a home network, national games. You know, just talk about 2021 real quick. What were the ups and downs of that, and also explain why that was a successful season for us?
Well, going into 2021, you know, we weren't even sure we were going to get the competition in completely because of COVID. And, you know, we were watching that in, you know, other professional leagues in North America where they were canceling games. And, you know, so going 99-0, which is something we were able to do, is to play 99 matches and not lose any to COVID. I mean, that, you know, was kind of the tail of the tape for me. The launch of the Rugby Network is really, really significant for us. We've been talking to the Rugby Pass for over a year. I met them at the LA Sevens the last time. I guess there was an LA Sevens. And the Rugby Pass dominates that landscape worldwide, but did not have a foothold in North America. And so we partnered with them to launch the Rugby Network. And, you know, right off the bat, we asked them, like, what does success look like in year one? And they said, you know, if you could get 25,000 followers and subscribers in the first year, you know, we think you're doing pretty well. And, you know, we got to that number kind of at the midway point of the season and then finished the season around 50,000 and now sit, you know, north of 50,000 by bringing in ancillary programming like collegiate and we're doing some professional rugby out of Japan and other things to get people to subscribe. So that's a really important tool for us. We own that 100%. So instead of us being, you know, the least attractive client on ESPN's OTT networks or what have you, we just said, let's start our own. And our owners were willing to fund it. It is not inexpensive, but it is a huge tool for us. And, you know, another thing that came out of that in that season was, as you talk to the international players that we brought over, like at every game, they would come up to, and we talk about things, always get back to the Rugby Network. And they would say, you know, what's happening is every player I've ever played with in my whole career is now following Major League Rugby on the Rugby Network. And they're sending us messages, you know, asking us how to get here, talking about the quality of play rising in year four, talking about the quality of officiating being so much better in year four than it was in 3-2-1, talking about the level of coaching that is now, you know, housed in Major League Rugby at our teams and how far that's come. So it really became, you know, we thought this was just kind of for the fans to access and to draw in new fans, but it also became kind of a recruiting tool and really a marketing piece for Major League Rugby as a whole. So, you know, and then you talked about the finals, you know, having our champion from the West in Los Angeles and our champions from the Eastern Conference in Atlanta kind of go at it for the finals in the historic LA Coliseum, you know, live on big CBS, you know, it was a really watershed moment for this league. You know, it was a beautiful day. They did a nice job of packing people in on the camera side. I know it's a big facility like we talked about earlier, but as you mentioned, we had over 2 million households tune in at some point during that telecast and like, that's a big deal. So, you know, we were very reticent getting into 2021. We thought there were a lot of landmines that we could be stepping on along the way, and we managed to miss all of them. And all in all, it was really, really successful season.
Well, I'll definitely look forward to 2022, which we'll talk about in a moment. But listeners, come up, and let's go to Peter DeHaas. Peter, how are you, buddy?
Yeah, doing well. Thank you. Thank you, Bull. I hope you guys are doing well. I've just got a couple of questions here for the commissioner. I firstly just want to congratulate you, Commissioner. This is Pete here from talking to you from Arkansas. But just what you guys already achieved in the league, you know, it's just amazing. I think, and I'm talking about out of a international perspective, not a U.S. perspective. You know, I believe rugby is a global game. It will always will be a global game. It's not like soccer or tennis or golf. In that regard, you know, so from a global perspective, you know, the everywhere, like you mentioned earlier, you know, the players, the administrators, the media people, they, you know, they look at the MLR now as a legitimate option. You know, if you look at players, you know, they look at they plan their careers literally as Major League Rugby as an option, you know, and that's just fantastic. I think, and we're already there, you know, it is there. I think, you know, there's no turning back. I can't see us, you know, going back. So just from my side, congratulations. I think it's unbelievable what you guys have achieved, you know, so, and, you know, I think literally a player, a top quality player today, they always want to go to Europe. You know, that's where the currency and the money is, or France, or a Super Rugby contact, or Japan. But after that, the MLR is the next step. You know, that's what the guys are looking at. So, anyway, my question is just out of a player's perspective. The first question is, you know, how do we foresee this salary cap? Because I think out of a player's perspective, obviously that's the first thing that come up in pro rugby. So is there a way that we are planning to increase the salary cap? I mean, to get it at a decent point. I mean, I'm not expect us to compete with the Europes and the Australias and New Zealands at this point in time, but to a significant higher situation. And then my last question is, I went to a bunch of stadiums and watched a bunch of MLR games last year across the country, and I'm still worried about the amount of people actually sitting in the stand, you know. And if we get to 5 years from now and there's still no people in the stand, or 1,000 people in the stand, or a couple of hundred, could that be a shot in the arm for the league? Could that clear the league? And that is my questions, and thank you for the time, sir.
Yeah, sure, Peter. You know, we'll start with the salary cap. You know, I think if you were to ask our owners, you know, we are more than willing to raise the salary cap as the business itself starts to grow. You know, right now, honestly, you know, these owners are losing quite a bit of money, you know, in order to own an MLR team. There's no way to say it any other way. And we don't really hide from it either. I mean, if you look at the MLS in its early years, what it lost, and really most professional leagues, that's what we're going through now. But as you look in North America and some of the other leagues, NBA, NFL, or what have you, as revenues rise, that is when they started to share the money with the players. In the NBA, you know, situation today, it's basically 50 cents of every dollar that comes in, you know, goes to the players. So we know that's important, and that's a goal, right? So that's a goal of ours. That means our business has grown. And it kind of leads into your second point. That means we're filling stadiums. That means we have great local sponsorships. That means that broadcasters are paying us big money for our rights to our games. That means that more people are buying merchandise. So, you know, to borrow a line from the great Mark Cuban, you know, sales cures all. You know, he said that from day one when he came to the Mavericks. In other words, revenue cures all. And right now, you know, we're just not there. We're not hitting those kind of numbers to your point. So that's what we've been working with our teams with. We've been saying, you know, it's if you wanted a one sentence kind of mission statement for Major League Rugby, it would be to play in attractive stadiums and fill them. And when I use the word attractive, that's attractive to your fans. It's attractive on television, and then to fill them. Because what happens country, as casual fans tune in and they're watching on Fox or CBS or on the Rugby Network, and they see a stadium full of rugby fans that are having a great time, you know, that changes perception right then and there. People are like, I told you rugby was going to work in North America. We've got to jump on the bandwagon. Sponsorship execs around the country are saying, now we're involved with them, aren't we? We told you next big thing coming. Let's get involved. Broadcasters are saying to their programming people, now we have their rights, don't we? Now, if we don't, we need to go get them, because look what's occurring here. And we're doing that in some of our stadiums. We're putting on a good show and the fans are turning up. And then in other stadiums, we're not doing as well. So it is job number one of our teams, you know, to really focus in on filling their stadiums. And in order to do that, you've got to be a great entertainment product, right? You've got to entertain the fans. We will not survive just on getting the rugby faithful to turn up in our stadiums. We need to have and create additional fans. And the way you do that is you turn a rugby match into an event, and it becomes a great entertainment option in that city where people are talking about it and they got to be a part of it. And we have the tools to do that. We talked about the marketability and the friendliness of the players, you know, earlier. Like these players, every one of them that reaches out to me says, I'll do whatever you need me to do. Like they are willing to do anything to help in this initiative to fill stadiums and become the next big thing. So, you know, hopefully that's kind of a long-winded answer to your question, Peter, but that's the key to the whole shoot match. You hold it, because if we don't grow, and we've done a nice job of growing from franchise. We've gone from 7 franchises when we started to 9 franchises the next year to 12 the following year, and we'll play 13 in the competition this year. And we have several that are looking to join us in 2023 that are going through their due diligence now. So that's not our issue. And it's not our issue that cities don't want MLR. They all do. So now once you get it, you've got to maximize it and fill your stadiums and become a great entertainment option. So not only the rugby fans, but just sports fans in general need and want to jump on board. And that's exactly what we need to do.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Yeah, I agree. And I've got so much appreciation for that. America must be the most difficult market to crack in business or in business. So again, just congrats to you guys and good luck for the year ahead, man.
Thanks, Peter. And I'll just add one thing. You know, where I differ a bit is I don't think it is a difficult North America is not a difficult place to crack as another professional league, because we've seen all that have come in front of us. We're able to take the learnings of, you know, the leagues that have been here 75 years and then look at a league like MLS that is turning 27 years old as we turn 5 years old and learn from them, because they're now selling it in year 27. Remember, the same thing happened when the MLS came to America. Everybody said, well, geez, soccer's not really our thing. That's more of a European thing. I don't really get it, blah, blah, blah. And now, 27 years later, they're selling their new franchises for $250 million to join the league. And then you also have to build a $250 million stadium as well. So you're in, if you want to bring an MLS city to, or MLS team to your city in Arkansas, you're in at $500 million before you even kick a ball. And that was MLS's trajectory. And, you know, so here we are going into year 5, them going to year 27. So, you know, the blueprint's there for us. It's just a matter of us executing. I will grant you, it is a very crowded professional sports market, but it's plenty big enough, right? There's tons of people through our research. There are tons of fans and people that are curious about rugby, mostly because they don't know the same old path that everyone else has gone. So they're like, hey, you know, the NFL's got their fans, NBA has their fans, whatever. I want to be a part of something. I want to be part of a movement, a revolution. I want to be a pioneer in something that I can call my own. So we know they're out there. And now it's just a matter of us attracting them to attend our games, to watch our games on the regional television and the national television, and then follow us on the Rugby Network. And then we have critical mass. And that's the key to really making money is having that critical mass.
And George, kind of staying on that theme of progress, and I know you touched on expansion, and we'll get to some of those questions in a little bit. I know you've got some secrets on it probably want to reveal to get off your chest about what city's next, and this is a great place to tell everyone, but we'll get there in a second. But earlier today, MLR released a number of changes, right, that I think around the head injury assessment and the TMO, a lot of things that fans and players in other leagues were probably looking at, and it was great that were implemented, right? And those might not be the sexiest of moves, but it continues to bolster and level up the MLR when you look at some of the other professional leagues. Walk us through that thought process about, you know, some of those changes that were implemented right before the start of the season.
Yeah, and if you look at our announcements today, you're right. They're not like the sexiest announcements, but it just goes to the core of what we're trying to do and the commitment from these owners, because all of these things cost a lot of money. But, you know, let's take HIA, you know, we'll start there. I mean, that came from an email from one of our players, you know, who was playing at Rooney last year. And he came to me and he said, I just want to have this conversation with you. And, you know, I just don't think MLR is dealing with the concussion protocols in the best way it possibly can. It's a young man by the name of Nick Savetta who really spearheaded this. And I said, absolutely. And we started a committee that was made up of league officials and players. And we started talking through it with our medical personnel and our chief medical officers. And so it took us, you know, time to try to get to HIA. You can't just flip on a switch and go into the HIA protocol. You have to be approved by World Rugby. There's a lot of things you have to put in place in order to do it that are very costly, but we did it. It was the right thing. So, you know, being able to announce that today is a proud moment for the league, because at the end of the day, player welfare, you know, and we're all reading headlines. We've watched, at least in this country, what the NFL has gone through in their concussion protocols through the years and the problems they're having there. Like, if we can be on the offense on this one instead of on the defense and put in the best possible concussion protocols there is in the sport, then we need to do it, which is what we did. And, you know, we're really excited about that. And the feedback, if you read kind of, you know, the comments today through Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, like, you know, all four of those announcements were met with, you know, this is the right thing to do, and giving us, you know, a pat on the back on taking this thing to the next level.
Phil, you've been patiently waiting.
Yes, sir. I just had to pause my game here. John, you're going to hate to hear this, but I just beat your Old Glory DC team 5-35. So, and I'm playing on hard mode too, my friend. So I put my substitutes in, and you were able to finally score a try there. So,
Maybe you'll move up the power rankings after that game.
I appreciate that. George, I wanted to jump in here again. I was thinking, at what point are we, Bill, you would know this better than I would, but I think there's about 14 great American women over in England playing in the Premiership over there. At what point are we going to be bringing those ladies home for a professional women's rugby league? Has that been discussed with the MLR owners? Is that something they're willing to commit to at some point in the near future?
Oh, for sure. It's something we discuss a lot. It's one of those things that's on the board along with sevens and women's and you know, all sorts of ideas, you know. But what I'll tell you is you have to get the core product right first.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to take care of business at home first before you start to expand into different product lines. And obviously the women's thing would be awesome. And we think it would do really, really well. And it just goes back to what we were talking with Peter a little bit. You know, we've got to take care of business at home. We've got to fill our stadiums for MLR first. And then we can start really talking about different opportunities that come our way. But yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, we've seen the growth of the women's game in soccer with the NWSL. We watch them very closely. And it's great, as we know, you know, soccer and rugby are good bedfellows as far as stadium situations. And we share a lot with USL teams and a couple of NWSL teams. So, yeah, it's right there. You know, I wish I could, if money wasn't an issue, we'd do it today, right? Like, I think there's enough qualified women out there to start a professional league today. But we're you know, we've really got to focus in on the core business first, get it right, get the momentum moving, and then start looking at those other opportunities.
I think the popularity of the Premier 15s is only good for prospects of a women's league here in the U.S. because numbers are really high. Broadcast numbers are high over there. Not to mention when Premier 15s .com, the streaming service here in the States, I mean, they're getting a lot of viewership. So, I mean, it's just a matter of time. And like you just said, George, you know, get this going first and then jump into that as well. So I think there's a market there for it just eventually.
Yeah, I would think so. And like you guys go to our matches, like in my first year as I went around, I was stunned at the lack of women at our games attending. It was like 80% male. And, you know, as I tell our guys all the time, like the world is 50% female. So, you know, we're just not catering to that demographic, and we're not doing things, you know, to welcome them into our stadiums or make them feel like part of this. And, you know, I mean, in rugby's DNA is such an inclusion and equitable kind of, you know, mantra. And, you know, just, we just weren't seeing that. And now I think last year, as I looked around, I just felt, and maybe it was just me and wishful thinking, I just felt like our attendances and our audiences were a lot more diverse. They were a lot more racially diverse. There was more equity on male and female. And that's the way the world's moving. So it's like, if we know that's what's going on, you know, let's speak to it and let's make sure all demographics, you know, feel welcome at our games and want to participate as fans of our teams. And I think we've done we're doing a better job of that today.
So before we go on to Andrew, we have another listener in the room, John Corbett. He sent me a DM, it's called. He's listening in from Melbourne, Australia. He's a banker by day, and it's like, 1:43 down there. He should be working, but he's listening in. He doesn't have a mic right now, but he has a really good question. I want to share this question from John. He wrote, professional rugby is growing in other parts of the world too, specifically, you know, in South America, Japan, and elsewhere, like the two Pacific Islands joining, two Pacific Islands teams joining Super Rugby Pacific this season. George, do you see this as a threat or an opportunity? Could there be later on to collaborate or cross-promote these emerging pro competitions?
Yeah, no, it's definitely an opportunity, right? I mean, you look at Japan and what they were before they hosted the World Cup and a couple World Cups previous when they were not even competitive as a nation, and then to host and do as well as they did. And then, you know, we've been talking to a group in Hawaii, for example. You know, sure, it'd be great to have a team in Hawaii, but the other thing that Hawaii is the gateway to Asia, you know, so you could have, you know, a wonderful, you know, situation to play a home game or a game in Hawaii, you know, with an Asian country and MLR. And, Yeah. So, I mean, I don't look at any of that as threats. I mean, Mexico is in our, you know, at some point should be in our future. There's some groups down there that are trying to kind of rally. They troll me on Twitter and are after me all the time. You know, and there'd be nothing better than to have a franchise in Mexico. You know, Argentina obviously is another area that's, you know, the ripe. And then, you know, one of the expansion cities we're looking at is kind of the Miami Fort Lauderdale area, which has a real gateway, you know, down there. So I don't look at any of that as a threat. I look at it all as an opportunity. You know, if you think about it, if, you know, we were to get the World Cup in the United States in 2031, which is in 10 years, and we were able to add, you know, an MLR franchise or two, you know, each year on that roadway, on the way to the 31 World Cup, you know, that we'd be a 30 plus team league at that point, you know, with teams in places like Hawaii and Mexico and another team in Canada and possibly something, you know, else, you know, down in the Miami, Orlando, and then onwards into other places, you know, outside of the U.S. from there. So, yeah, I mean, it's a great, you know, thing to think about. And it's kind of back to where we sit today on getting the core business right. And then really look at those opportunities for, as we grow MLR, to be able to compete on higher levels.
Right. So everybody, we have 15 minutes left. The time is flying right by. It's been a great conversation so far. Again, thank you all for joining us on USA Rugby Happy Hour Live with our guest today is Major League Rugby Commissioner George Killebrew. Again, if you want to get up here and speak, please go ahead and request it. We'll get you up here right away. Again, we've got about 15, 14 more minutes left to get them in. And while you're here, go ahead and give us a follow. Give us a follow on Eagles Overseas and Rugby Morning to keep up on the latest news of USA Rugby podcasts and all news about rugby, pretty much, you know, especially with Rugby Morning. So Andrew's come up to speak. Andrew, how you doing?
Doing all right. You guys good, too?
Great.
You sound good. George, I'm going to start it by thanking you for your openness and candor since you've been on board with coming on podcasts and speaking to the fans. It's been really nice. One big thing you said last year was that you were rooting for every team to go 8-8. And I loved that because as the resident of a state that does not have a large salty body of water, there's not really a team near me. So I'm not rooting for a specific team. I'm rooting for a good match. So how do you see the parity maybe improving in this coming year?
Yeah, I mean, I've been pretty consistent. I said it a bit differently. I said that there's really nothing good that comes out of 16-0 or 0-16. Like, there's nothing good. We had that situation before I got here in Austin where, you know, the team couldn't win, and it's just not healthy, right? So, and it's also not healthy having someone win all the games. So I said I'm fine with 8-8 across the board. You know, and we did a pretty decent job of that. If you looked at kind of the, you know, the win-loss records last year, you know, you didn't have an outlier on either side, which was good. I mean, everyone won. Even our last place team won 3 or 4 matches. So, you know, I'm a big believer in that. Like, I just think, you know, I like to keep it interesting till the end, which, by the way, last year, we kept it very interesting to the end. You know, there were 3 or 4 teams in every division going in to the last couple weekends that had a shot. Which is exactly what you want. You don't want somebody running away with it and everybody kind of tuning out, and you don't want somebody being, you know, the doormat. So believer in it. We'll see what happens this year. Every year's a new year. I'm amazed at how many kind of returning players that we have. You know, I think in the earlier years, like, you know, we were adding a lot of new faces and bodies, you know, but it seems like, you know, a lot of the cores are coming back and the competition is heating up, and especially those teams that were on the fringe. You look at Austin, you look at Old Glory, you look at NOLA Gold, you know, that we're kind of all knocking on the door but didn't quite get there into the Final Four. So I think it's going to be interesting, and I think the competition is going to be great this year. I'm really looking forward to it.
Thanks, Andrew. Did you get the answer you wanted from George?
I did. I'm always rooting for good parity.
Awesome. Hey, guys, again, real quick, 10 minutes left. Coming up, let's ask George some more questions. George, I want to jump back a bit in the meantime. I want to go back to where when you took the job. You know, what was it? I mean, you were 27 years with Avs, multiple roles. You came into Major League Rugby in the third season. You know, what was the selling point? What was it about Major League Rugby that attracted you to the gig?
Well, I mean, honestly, I think most of you know my background. I didn't know really anything about rugby at all. Mm-hmm. There was a search firm that was doing the search for commissioner, and they got to Mark Cuban, and Mark kind of said to me, you know, you should do this. Obviously not because of my rugby prowess, but just kind of just the business tenets that make up a major league franchise or league that we've kind of been doing the last 20 years or so with the Mavs, with Mark. And then I met, you know, the owners. And that's really, you're just, and I talked to, a couple of my friends in the NBA, deputy commissioners and stuff like that. I said, what's the key to all? And they said, who are these owners? Because if you have bad owners, it's just going to be a bad job. But if you have owners that are willing to invest and willing to try things and are, kind of 100% all in, they're not just, do it for a year and then jump out, then it's probably not in your best interest. And so as I met, five of the owners that were the, kind of interview committee, and then I knew a couple of the others, and, there was just solidarity amongst them. They're all very driven to make professional rugby work in North America. It's just that simple. And when you're working for guys like that, that all believe that all the work that we're doing, which is heavy lifting, is worth it, then it makes it a no-brainer.
I just had a quick question. I had to ask George, now that he's been around rugby a little bit, say he attends a men's club, he's on the sideline, and one of the team is short a player, and they ask you to play, George, what position are you going to go out and play?
Yeah, I mean, we should just cut that off at the beginning. I would just say no. yeah, it's funny, everyone's always asking me, how am I getting along with the laws, and do I get the game and everything? Like, Ben Foden at New York has been kind of my, de facto coach on stuff. And so I was talking to Ben the other day, and he goes, how are you getting along with the laws? I go, Ben, I got to tell you, man, I'm doing the best I can, but geez Louise, like, this game has. And he started laughing. He goes, oh, don't worry about it, Kamesh. He goes, I've been playing for 20 years. I still don't know all the rules. So I figured if Foden and, can get away with that, then my ramp up to being a rugby expert doesn't have to be quite as steep. But yeah, it's been fine. I mean, the thing I really enjoy is just these players. I mean, they're just great guys. And you look at a guy like Ben, who was just doing like dancing on ice in England. I have no idea like what the deal was, but he was on national television in England doing this ice dancing competition, which is sounds weird, but they're also colorful and they have great personalities and they're willing to learn. They're willing to help. Like, it's just the most awesome part of the job is getting to know these players.
And I think the most accessible group of athletes, I think, of any sport. I think so.
Any sport I've been around, for sure.
Yeah.
Because, in other leagues, when you're asking players to do things, like the 13 we flew in for three, like, hard days. These were not easy days. They were up, to do the Rise of Rugby and do the media day. Like, no one, called and said, well, what are you paying me to do this? like, there's none of that. Hey, I need you to go do this camp or this clinic or, whatever. And, sure, when we can pay for things, we want to pay them, for camps and clinics and things like that. But this was just a marketing piece. Now, of course, they all thought they were going to get featured and they're going to have their face all over. So, money isn't important when you're getting that kind of fame. But they're just great guys, to your point. And I really, that's the thing we have got to do a better job of, is to storytell, about these guys. And we've been really focused on that this offseason as we learn about them, just to really expose to fans who these guys are, because that's what it's about. Like, if you have children and you're thinking about rugby, and you start seeing some of the quality of these athletes and you want your son or daughter to grow up to be someone, that's respectful and all the things that our players are, it's like they're right there for the taking. We just got to do a better job of getting them out there.
Is an MLR All-Star game, is that something that's being discussed?
Our calendar is so tight. I mean, obviously, we're opening this weekend, which is not, honestly, the best weekend to open. There's a lot of things going on in the world, the Super Bowl and things like that. But we have to be done by July 1st for the test window. And then you remember last year when we had to, let these players go for that 2-week period for the test window. And I remember a couple of the Austin players that went and they were on the step of qualifying for the playoffs and they had to leave their team. Their team ended up losing. They didn't get in the playoffs. They're like, don't put us in this position ever again. Like, this is so unfair. Like, they felt horrible for their MLR team as they went to play for their country. So we're going to avoid that. We're going to try to take advantage of this window. So that makes an all-star game tough.
Phil's back up here. What's up, Phil?
Third time's a charm, I guess. I'm back. So just wanted to ask you real quick, George, what's the, let's set the stage here for a second. It's January. It's cold up here in New England. Warm weather state, maybe Texas or Florida. How about we have a little preseason sevens tournament, for all the MLR teams, just like the Premiership used to do? Would love that. I think that'd be a blast, probably sell out like a soccer-specific stadium to get some people that are freezing their butts off up here, a little preseason rugby action for sevens. What do you think?
Hey, I love the idea. But the other thing I've learned after being the commissioner of this league for going on my third year is when you try to predict the weather, you're in dangerous territory. So just as you're sitting there, Phil, I know you're going to be playing, you know, rugby on the computer all night, but turn on the weather channel. Look what's going on in Texas. So I'm in Dallas. It's 20 degrees and it snowed and ice today, which, by the way, people in, I'm originally from Hawaii. So I don't understand snow and ice, and people in Texas don't understand snow and ice. So it is, there is an inch of snow and ice on the ground in Dallas today. So like, you think you know what the warm weather cities are, and then you don't, because you get something like this. Like when in Austin on Saturday, the high is going to be 46 and the low is still going to be in the 20s. So wow. Yeah, we think we're pretty good at you know, putting, you know, the warm weather cities to kind of kick this thing off, but we're having just a weird weather spell. I don't know. Just trying to get the weather right. I've not been able to get that, but I love the idea. But
how about this, George? What was your first, like, what the hell moment when you were learning more about the game?
From a rule standpoint, like in North America, it's when you kick the ball out of bounds, that's a turnover, and the other team gets possession and comes the other way. So like being able to, like, as my friends and family and stuff are trying to get acclimated too, they're like, wait, what's the deal here? Like, they're kicking the ball out of bounds. It should be other team's ball. I'm like, yeah, I agree. I got to call Foden on that one. I don't know the answer. But,
You got him on speed dial or just text? So, George, what's next? Got a couple minutes left here. What are we looking forward to the most for the 2022 season? You know, what's the outlook look like? You know, obviously higher attendance numbers because, you know, more and more cities are opening from COVID, more broadcast viewers. You know, what are we looking forward to here?
All of the above. Like, we need to continue to grow in each of those metrics. We need to turn our matches into great entertainment options. You know, when we first got here, there wasn't even a mascot in the place. Now we got eight, right? So, like, these teams are really good at kind of taking the best practices from each other and amping it up, you know, music and fireworks and just all the bells and whistles that makes for a great event. And that should help grow attendance. Obviously the Rugby Network has just been performing better, you know, than we ever expected. And we want to continue to grow that, continue to make that the home of rugby content in North America, you know, bottom line. So yeah, MLR will anchor it, but continue to bring on other properties, other shows, things like that, you know, give it a hub and a place where people can go to get everything they need from a rugby perspective in North America, right there on the Rugby Network. So, yeah, I mean, all fired up, all things are good. I wish a little bit more in our rearview mirror. Mm-hmm. We're still battling that. So getting, you know, back to the 99-0, getting these matches in, I mean, it sounds basic, but that's a really important thing for us, just to deliver on our content and make sure that we're, you know, getting our matches in for our fans that are attending, for our broadcast partners, for our sponsors. We've grown our sponsorship base again, which is great. We're 34% over where we were last year at this point from a cash investment into the league from sponsors. So, you know, we're doing all the right things and we're growing for sure. We just got to keep trying to grow a little bit faster and add a couple new teams down in here that are well-capitalized in great cities, that have great stadiums, that have great, you know, sports management DNA, and great youth rugby plans for those cities. You know, that's kind of what we look for. And we're talking to a number of those now. And spoiler alert, I'm not going to tell you who, but two are, you know, just right on the doorstep trying to get their hacks together. And
oh, come on. No one's listening. You can tell us.
Well, then if one of them doesn't work out, you're going to hold me to it. Oh. There's backups. Trust me, there's backups that would love to get in for 23, but there are two groups that are kind of ahead of the game for 2023. Which is a great problem to have. Like, 2022 is set, competition's ready, starts this weekend, and off we go.
Well, George, we're all excited about this next season. We're all excited about this weekend and moving on from here. I think you're doing wonderful work so far, and well, not just so far. I think you're doing wonderful work. But again, thank you so much for joining us here this hour. It's been awesome. I think we've all learned a few things as well. Good luck in the 2022 season, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Happy to jump on anytime.
All right, thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend and join us again next Thursday for Dan Power. Good night, everybody.